Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Wiser. Today, we are honored to have Dr. Betsy Grunch with us on the podcast. Dr. Grunch is an esteemed neurosurgeon and physician's shareholder at the Longstreet Clinic in Gainesville, Georgia, where she operates at both the Northeast Georgia Medical Center and the Gainesville Surgery Center. She's a Georgia native and went to UGA for her undergrad, then MCG for medical school. She then attended Duke University for her residency in neurosurgery, and then spine fellowship. Dr. Grunch is also known as Lady Spine Doc on social media platforms, including Instagram and TikTok, where she has almost 2 million followers. Welcome, Dr. Grunch, and thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So to start things off, can you just tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, so I'm Betsy Grunch. I am born and raised in Gainesville, Georgia. I went to school all in Georgia, kind of got interested in neurosurgery in high school. My mom was involved in an auto accident that left her quadriplegic in the line of duty as a police officer. And so that sparked my interest in neurosciences and kind of jump-started me becoming interested in medicine. And I did all my schoolings in Georgia to kind of stay close to home. And then I matched in neurosurgery at Duke, and I spent 6 years in training there. And I came back in 2013 when I graduated back to Gainesville, which is where my family lives. And I have been here for the past almost 11 years now in private practice neurosurgery. And I do a broad spectrum of general neurosurgery, including brain and spine, but mostly focus on spine in my practice. I do minimally invasive surgery, open scoliosis surgery, all the things basically. And I've, like I said, been there for about 11 years, and have been, as you mentioned, kind of growing on social media as like an unintended side gig for the past 3 or so years. So that's been a fun ride, which I'm sure we'll talk about today.
Yeah, thanks. We're excited to be interviewing someone from Georgia.
And I was just going to say, Dr. Grunch, you're actually one of our very first private practice surgeons that we've ever had on our podcast. And as medical students at Emory, we don't have very much exposure to what it's like being in private practice. So do you think you could tell us a little bit about the dynamics of private practice versus academic medicine and kind of what drew you towards either side?
Yes. So I, like I mentioned earlier, my interest in medicine was in high school, and I began to shadow my mom's surgeon in high school and college, who was private practice. And so my exposure initially to medicine was in private practice. And I actually worked, I took a year deferment to medical school. My mom was really sick, and they actually didn't think that she was going to survive. She had a bad respiratory illness. And so it took off a year because I knew that I wanted to do neurosurgery and I wanted to be successful in medical school and have good grades. And I just didn't think I was going to be able to do that with her being sick at the time. And so I took a year off. Long story short, I worked during that year as well at the same practice. And so I had a really early exposure in private practice medicine. Not only that, in high school, I worked at a physical therapy clinic, which was private practice. I also was a nursing assistant in high school. And so that was kind of like, I've never been around academic medicine until I went to medical school and residency. And so I think for most students aren't like me. They don't have that exposure to the outside world outside of what we know in our training, which is academic medicine. And I think we kind of think that that's the way all medicine is, and that's the way we learn, but they're two totally different fields, almost, the way that, you know, a private practice setting is versus academics and a teaching setting are really just, in my mind, kind of two different things. I mean, the medicine part of it's the same, but the dynamics of teaching and research and presentations and all that is so much different focus than what it is. And so I would really encourage everyone, if you have the opportunity, to at least, you know, do a rotation in a private practice setting. If you have the opportunity to do an elective, like, you know, even if it's in pediatrics or medicine or family medicine, just to kind of get that exposure outside of what we know as medicine, because it is so different. I think, you know, for me, I don't like the culture of academic medicine. It's just very stressful and very, I don't know, competitive almost, you know, you have to kind of show up and really know your stuff. And it's focused on answering questions and getting pimped and knowing the answers all the time. Whereas really just taking care of patients is what I enjoy. I really love that. I love getting to spend as much time with my patients, coming out, doing my work and going home to my family and not having that extra stress of, did I present so-and-so on grand rounds or did I go to that lunch meeting? It's like, no, I'm going out to lunch to have some Mexican food with my friends and then I'm going to go back to work. And, you know, I just think that having varying exposures is really important to know what you want to do in your career because it could really mean two totally different things in the long term.
I do think that's really something we do not get to see at all, at least for me.
Yeah, no, it's true. I think I really didn't understand that until I started talking to some friends of mine. Actually, it was probably about 6 months ago. And I'm like, you know what? Yeah, I had that exposure. But as medical students, most people and residents, most people don't get that exposure. So I think it's important.
I feel like there's almost even a little bit of like a, I don't want to say like a judgment, but it's like,
oh, it's a judgment.
Like different how people being. Okay. Yeah, it's slightly judging the way that it's viewed in terms of comparing to academic medicine, which I think is weird because we're all just here trying to take care of patients.
Yeah, I think, no, I mean, I think that as academic, you know, our attendings, we all look up to people that were being taught by. And for the most part, people that are, unless they came from a private practice setting, they only know academics. And so there is this judgment factor that maybe private practice people don't do as much, or maybe they, you know, maybe they're more interested in, you know, the money or more interested in lifestyle or not really interested in research. And that's looked down upon. And that's, you know, really not the case at all. I think, you know, there's a focus on really just taking good care of patients, which is what I really enjoy about my job. I don't have the stressors of trying to please anyone else. It's just pleasing my patients and pleasing myself and having the ability to say, you know what, like next Friday, I have something that I need to do for my kids' school. And so I'm going to take that day off and reschedule patients. And, you know, I don't have to ask permission. It's my practice. I can do what I want. And I think particularly as women, you know, the reality is that a lot of women decide to have families, and having that freedom to really be your own boss is really important in your work-life balance. So I think it's important to get that exposure as early as possible to kind of know what you want to do, because that may change your field of view of your career and what you might want to do. So
it's definitely interesting to think about where we would see ourselves way in the future for us, but
yeah, not far away.
I like that on your social media, you really highlight the team dynamics of your practice. Can you tell us more about how you've built your team and the strategies you use as a team leader to make your team work well together?
Yes, I think in healthcare, it's a team sport. I grew up playing sports in high school and college, and I think really healthcare is no different. I think as surgeons or as physicians, you're the leader of the team. And I think that we have to realize that everyone has a vital role on the team, whereas the patient is the focus. And that's not just me doing a good job and, you know, getting all the high fives, but it's the nurses, you know, in the operating room, it's the scrub techs, my PAs, my medical assistants in clinic, even the ladies up front that schedule the appointments. You know, the patient experience really begins when the patient reaches out to your office to make an appointment. And every person they talk to is a representation of you as the physician. And so if you take that ownership of building a good team and everyone having trust in you and building you up as the doctor, it really serves best in patient care. Not only like does the patient have a good experience and they feel cared for? But if you have a team that's really comfortable with you as their leader, they can open, ask questions without feeling like they might be judged or yelled at or whatever. And that only leads to better communication, which leads to better care. And I think in surgery, that's incredibly important because we all know these kind of doctors that are, you get scared of them. You don't want to ask them questions. You might get yelled at or might get asked a question you don't know the answer to. And so the tendency is we don't want to ask questions because we don't want to get in trouble or we don't want to get yelled at or we don't want to make this person mad. And if that's the kind of environment you build as a leader of your team, there are going to be errors. There's going to be mistakes that are made because they don't know the answer. And so they want to answer them themselves. And maybe they don't know the answer, but they're too scared to speak up. And so I think as the leader of a team, it's really, really important to include everybody, make everybody feel valued, build a positive work environment where everyone feels valued and loved and open and cared for and seen as a member of that team with no, you know, with no limitations. So that's the type of environment I've strived to build. And that's what I try to represent on social media, because I think we learn it as medical students. You know, if you're around people and doctors that treat everyone like trash, you think, well, that's what I'm supposed to do as a doctor. I'm supposed to yell at the nurses. I'm supposed to, you know, tell the medical student that they're stupid or like roll my eyes at whoever's throwing away the trash. I mean, that's not how you would treat people in the real world. And I think the same goes in medicine. So.
And I 100% agree. I know for a fact that when I'm in an OR with an attending who, you know, displays all the characteristics that you just talked about, my learning is way better than with the other kind of attending who you're just kind of scared to say anything, scared to make eye contact. Like it's very uncomfortable and not particularly good for learning either.
Right. Things lifelong. I mean, you know, not only do the students learn, but everyone in the room learns. We had a crazy call shift this weekend and my PA who's been with me for well over a year. She was like, wow, I learned so much this weekend because we saw so much crazy stuff. So, you know, it's medicine. You learn something new every day. So
I think it's amazing. So many people on your team are women too. Was that something that you were trying to curate in your team or did it just kind of happen?
For a while I had an all women team and that wasn't really intentional. I'll be honest. I mean, you know, a lot of people in healthcare are women that aren't physicians. You know, my medical assistants have always been women. But I think as a woman leader, for me, initially, when I was looking at hiring a physician assistant, I'll be honest, like, I didn't really want to hire a male because I didn't want them to be seen as the physician. I'm the leader of the team. And I have worked with PAs in the past that were male and the patients thought that he was a doctor and I was not. And that's just gender bias in general. And I was already a young surgeon and I already didn't get thought of as the surgeon to begin with. I'm now a lot more seasoned, if you will. So that doesn't happen quite as much. But the reality is that, you know, being a young woman surgeon, I needed a team where I was felt by others as the leader, which was hard. And so I did initially build a team like that. But no, I think you just kind of build an environment, like I said, of people that you feel really comfortable with. And for me, the way I've kind of built my team is really, I call myself a little bit of a sniper, but I find people that are in healthcare that are in other roles that I really get along with, and they migrated over to my team. And I may or may not have sniped some of them off. But yeah, I mean, I have a male PA now, and he's brought a good dynamic to our team as well. And I've had a male PA with me in the past too. So I just think it's natural who you gravitate to. And that's like friendships too, you know. So I think you'll naturally have members of your team that you feel comfortable with. And for me, that has been a lot of women. So
is that different than your experience training as in, which is one of the most male dominated specialties?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, in some ways, I kind of enjoy working with men because for the most part, they're very black and white. Like there's no reading between the lines and trying to read through emotions with men. So being in training, it was really easy. But yeah, I mean, I think being a woman in a male-dominated field does kind of have it positives and negatives. And yeah, I mean, you just learn to kind of work through those and where you shine. And I think we haven't talked about this yet, but I think being a woman in a male-dominated field, you almost kind of feel like you have to work harder to be seen as equal. Especially in training, like I didn't want to be seen as the weak link or as the person that didn't work as hard, because I felt like I was already, I wouldn't say an outcast, but a little bit of one. And I didn't want what was different about me to reflect a part of me. So I do feel that we almost take it upon ourselves that we have to work even a little harder than the guys to show up and to show that we are mentally capable, emotionally capable, physically capable of doing a job that most men just do.
How would you say you kind of dealt with those feelings of being, you know, a little bit of an outcast and having to work harder than else?
I think that there's, you know, times where it's really hard because we naturally want to connect people that are like us. We want to talk to people that have had those same experiences as us. And when you're surrounded by everyone that doesn't, it's hard to feel that support. But I think you just have to find it in other ways. So for me in training, I did have for the majority of my residency two other female colleagues, and I really gravitated to them for that type of support, but they weren't always there. You know, if we're on a different rotation or doing something totally different. And I just turned a lot to my nursing colleagues, honestly. I mean, in residency, I was at the hospital almost all of my waking hours. And so I had to have friends in the hospital. And I really found some of my best friends in my training were some of the nurses that I just gravitated to. If I needed to talk about something or whatever, I could just pop up on the floor and sit down and chat with them. And so yeah, I think you just kind of have to find your people and who you can kind of connect with to make your mental life a little bit easier.
I think shift gears a little bit. How did you decide to start sharing your life and your career on social media?
Oh, that's a great question. Really, this whole social media thing was not like some kind of plan. It just kind of happened that way. I've always been a very big user of social media in my personal life. I really love looking at social media. I love posting about my life and my family. For me, when I was in residency, that was really the only way I could connect with my family back home was social media, because I was so far away and so busy. And so it made me feel like I was home when I wasn't. So I did use social media a lot, and that naturally gravitated when I moved back home to my, you know, personal life as a physician. And I struggled with really trying to figure out what was okay to post as a physician. So I, you know, for the most part, just had my own personal pages with guarded contacts and had all the privacy settings on, so none of my patients could find me. And I started trying to figure out how to post as a physician. Like I had a professional page on Instagram and Facebook, but didn't really post a lot because I didn't know what to post about. And then I think during the pandemic, really a lot of physicians started using social media. And maybe just a short period of time before that. So I had some content creators, physicians that I followed, and I started getting, you know, ideas from them. I'm like, well, they can post about this. Why can't I post about this? And so my PA and I made a couple of reels, and then I got home at night and I was like, I'm just going to post about being a female surgeon. I'm just going to put this reel up or whatever. And so I made it in TikTok. I had like 2 followers in TikTok. I didn't use TikTok. And I was just going to post it in Instagram because I didn't know how to use the settings at the time. So anyway, posted on TikTok, let it go, post to download and upload to Instagram. And my Instagram friends really liked it. But some people thought it was funny, whatever. But then I opened up the TikTok app the next day and that video went viral. And I was a little like, what is happening right now? Because I didn't even know that your videos could go out. You know, Instagram, like who, they just go to your followers. It's not part of some sort of convoluted algorithm. And so I was really taken back by all the feedback, and mostly positive feedback from, you know, women like yourselves, like medical students and maybe pre-med students that were like, wow, I've never seen a female neurosurgeon, and asking a lot of genuine questions and being very positive. And I'm like, this is a really cool way of reaching out to the future generation. And so I just started looking into doing more on social media after that video. And I committed to doing, I looked up like kind of how the algorithm worked and committed to doing like one video a day for 3 months. I said, all right, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do one video a day for 3 months and see how it goes. And within 3 months on TikTok, I had over 100,000 followers. And I, at that point, it was kind of like a runaway train, and it's been nothing but that since. So yeah, it's been an interesting road.
Yeah, that's super cool. And I just want to say, I feel like I was probably one of the ones who saw that first video. And it's crazy probably how much of an impact you've had on people in healthcare in general. But do you think that it's changed your, you know, your medical practice or your relationship with patients at all?
Honestly, social media has changed my life. And I mean that in the most sincerest way. It's really been such a positive thing for me as a person. Getting back to the conversations on private practice, I mean, I'm just a doctor taking care of my patients, and I go home to my family, and I don't teach. I don't have students. I don't really have that interaction with other healthcare workers like in an academic setting. And so it's allowed me to do the things that I really do enjoy, but I really maybe just don't want to do in front of a bunch of old guys, you know, and get yelled at. So I can teach, I can talk about fun things. And it has kind of migrated into more of a page on my life in general, like my kids, my family, my job, because that's me. And I think the only way I can sustain a continuity of content, if I only talk about what I want to talk about. And what I want to talk about is the things that are on my mind at the time, which is not always medicine. And I've been successful at that. I think some of those have really are part of the reason why I have such a big following, because if I just talked about neurosurgery all the stuff time, people wouldn't really probably be that interested. But I think a lot of people, you know, like you guys, want to know what it's like whenever I graduate and become a doctor. Like, can I be a mom? Can I go on vacation? Can I do fun stuff? Can I, you know, whatever the questions may be. And not everyone's comfortable with that. And that's totally fine. I mean, it's not really meant for everybody to be like that. And there's not a lot of physicians that do what I do because they are either nervous about what other people may think or just don't feel comfortable sharing a lot of their personal life. And that's totally okay. But that's just the way I've been successful and the way that's kept it sustainable for me.
I think definitely as someone who is a student who watches your TikToks, you do go over a lot of topics that I would not be comfortable asking and attending about. So it's great to see all those other things too, and not just strictly neurosurgery content.
Yeah. And those are the real questions people have. Like, maybe what is it like to be pregnant while you're operating? What is it like to have debt? What is it like if you have to sneeze in the operating room? I don't know, just random things that people want to know. And I'm just a very real person. I like having casual conversations about everything, and it just has given me such a voice to other people. And it's weird, right? Like, I went to freaking Italy and was in Milan in the shopping mall, and people are recognizing me. And I'm like, this is crazy, but in a really cool way. You know, it's kind of magnified who I am as a person. It's made me a better person because I feel like I can communicate better. I've really learned how to explain things better because I've developed ways of teaching on this platform. But not only that, it's allowed me to understand people's feelings better. Sometimes I've thought something and posted it and people take it a different way. So it's allowed me to kind of understand how people think and how the public really thinks of doctors. You know, people just have this gross misunderstanding of what it's like to be a physician or if doctors can take time off. And so that's allowed me to kind of understand what my patients think about expectations of care. And that's allowed me to break down those boundaries. And ultimately, I think it gives me a much closer relationship with my patients because they see me as their doctor, but they also kind of see me as in some ways like a friend or someone that they trust because I talk about my kids and I'm normal. I take them to baseball games on Saturday and I don't seem unapproachable. And I think it gives them sometimes a very unfounded trust in me. Before they even meet me, they kind of have this trust because they think they know me. But I think it's cool because it does allow them to feel somewhat connected and a trust in me before I even talk to them as their doctor about their back or the problems they have. And I think that only makes a stronger bond with my patients. So it's been a crazy experience.
You talked a little bit about seeing patients having misconceptions about maybe surgery or your field. Have you ever addressed any of those misconceptions?
Yeah, I think both on social media and in my practice, I think people think, okay, like, I think that when I need my doctor, I want to call them and I want them to respond to me immediately. I think that if people see, hey, my doctor's been up on call for 72 hours straight and has not slept and she's tired, and I didn't think about the fact that she's got to put, you know, her kids to bed, and is this medicine question at midnight really important to me? I think it has kind of allowed a more humane approach to medicine and allows people to understand that we do have a significant amount of responsibility that I don't think the average person really understands what we do. So I'm not just taking care of patients in my clinic that I saw today, but I've got, you know, 17 people in the hospital under my care. I might get called 12 times tonight in the middle of the night. And not only that, but I have 2 children I have to take to school in the morning, and I have to feed them breakfast and pack their book bags and all the things that people just don't think that we all do normal things too. So anyway.
You also mentioned that you've maybe posted videos in the past that didn't land the way you thought they were, or like people reacted differently than you thought they would. Do you think you could share any memorable experiences or interactions with your followers that have influenced, you know, your approach to either surgery or your practice or social media or anything like that?
Yeah, I don't know if I can think of one exact example. I think in healthcare, we become jaded about the things that we get annoyed by. And if we go online and we talk about that and you see how that's perceived by the public, like, you know, what we see and experience every single day on our side is a very life-changing moment for one person's life. And I think if you really think about the things that you say and how you portray yourself and how you interact with your followers on social media really shows the kind of person that you are. And I think we are all influencers, whether or not we have a big following or not, but the things that we say can affect what one person thinks about a doctor. And so what I try to post about is positivity about caring and compassion and healthcare and teamwork and all the important things that patients really need to know that exist. And it's not all about these other things that we may see out there. And I'm not saying I'm not victim of putting out a video that definitely may be misinterpreted, or maybe I didn't think about the way it might be viewed, or something that I think is funny that's maybe not really funny as a person looking at it without the right context.
How do you think social media either is changing or will change or has changed the medical field? I'm sure you're like at the forefront of the change right now. So do you think you could speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, I think that social media is here to stay. I mean, it's free. It's easily accessible information. It's things that everybody learns about. And information is power. And empowering the patient is incredibly important. And where people get their knowledge, a lot of times, I mean, even for me, I don't go on CNN and read the news every single day, but I do open my TikTok app every single day. And so I watch some of my news on TikTok. And so that's the same with healthcare. Like, you know, if I have a headache, not me personally, but a person may type in headaches into TikTok and they get it on somebody that's feeding them misinformation, it can really be harmful. And so I really think it's so important for people that have the knowledge and training, like doctors that are board certified in their specialty, to get out there and post and kind of get rid of that misinformation that exists out there. And the more of us that are out there that are knowledgeable in our respective fields is only going to further empower patients for appropriate information and not misinformation, which is important. And the honest reality is, and I talk about this a lot because I talk at meetings and stuff about social media. I mean, the last thing a doctor wants to do at the end of their long day is to come home and make a video about their field. A lot of times, I mean, you just want to go home and decompress. You've been to work all day. You don't want to come home and talk in front of the camera about your job. And so I think it's a special type of person that really enjoys doing that. But I think the more young generation of folks that are learning medicine, like your generation, that's really kind of been grown up in social media, will only make those type of content more accessible. And I have seen a rise in young physicians with good quality content that have grown. Even in neurosurgery, there's a couple of residents that I've followed that's really put out some good content. And so I think it's here to stay. I think it's powerful. I think it's good for your practice, but more importantly, just kind of good information for the general public.
Definitely. There unfortunately is a lot of misinformation out there. It drives me crazy to see TikToks where I'm like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, I mean, in spine and neuroscience, there's so many, and I don't want to speak negatively against chiropractors, but there are a ton of content about spine care that's complete garbage. And people do things that they read on social media versus taking good-hearted information from people that actually know what they're talking about. So yeah, for sure.
I think to talk about some more fun topics, we know you have two adorable young children that make guest appearances on your social media page. How has it been balancing motherhood with being a full-time surgeon?
It's definitely been challenging. I think I have continued to learn from that. I think being a mom in general, you learn from whether or not you're a surgeon or not. I think we all learn how to better manage our jobs with our children. And that's no different in medicine, except sometimes in surgery, there's, you know, if I have a patient on the table, I can't just leave if my child is sick. And so I think there's so many responsibilities and things that that you have to think about as a surgeon. For example, if I'm on call at the hospital and my husband's out of town, or like if I was a single, I have to be prepared to leave in the middle of the night. And you have to have someone there with you at all times in case you have to leave. And I just think there's a lot of extra responsibilities that you have to consider, but it's definitely been a work in progress. And I've learned even in the past year about how to better do that and how to be more present, not only for them, but for myself. And medicine is one of those fields where it can really completely engulf you if you let it. If you let people take, they will take. If you let your practice take you, it is never ending. And you have to really just kind of dedicate yourself to having those other parts of your life that are important to you. And setting boundaries is incredibly important.
Yeah, it seems like everything just gets harder and harder, you know, from med school to residency to attending. So developing boundaries is so important.
Yeah, boundaries is very important. And, you know, I think as students and residents, it's really hard because you want, I mean, more so as students, I think, because you want everyone to think positively about you so you can get to that next goal. And I think as physicians in training, we always are looking forward to that next step. But it really does get better. I will say that, you know, once you get out of training and you have your own ability to manage your life outside of what's expected of you in your training, it is so much better. It's worth every bit of it. I love my job. I love what I do for patients. I love the lifestyle that I live for my kids, the legacy that I've built for myself and for my kids. It's all been worth it, but absolutely learning self-care is first and then everybody else second. And that's as a student, which I wish I could go back to my younger self and teach myself some things that I didn't do so well. But yeah.
One of the questions that we like to ask everyone, which is, what accomplishment do you think you're most proud of so far?
100% my kids. I never thought being a mom would mean so much to me. And really, it's the most important thing to me and brings me joy every single day. And I think as a professional woman, we all value our career and what other people think of us so much. And we want to be people pleasers. We want to be the best. We want to be successful. We want to show everybody that we belong here. And at the end of the day, when you go home at night, it's your family. And those are the ones that are always going to be there for you no matter what. So if you were to get in a car accident and not be able to work again, they're going to hire somebody else and move on to the next. And that stuff's easily replaceable. But what's not replaceable is what you have at home and those people that really care for you through thick and thin. And those are the people that you really need to focus on building the best relationships with.
That's so true. Something else we like to ask is, do you have a favorite song that you like to play in the OR or any kind of favorite music that you play in the OR?
Yeah, I really enjoy just hip hop, like badass female rappers. So just if I'm needing to be in the zone or in the mood, like I love like Megan Thee Stallion, Cardi B kind of vibe. It just puts out the energy that I like to have, Nicki Minaj, whatever. But mostly I listen to hip hop and 90s hip hop. I love that genre of music, or Taylor Swift if I'm feeling in that kind of mood. But yeah.
Awesome. Well, I think just a very last question to close out. If you could peek into a crystal ball, what do you think you would be doing in 10 to 20 years? Are you still going to be on TikTok? Are you still going to be practicing? What do you think is going to be going on?
I mean, I'd like to think that I would be living on the side of an island in Hawaii somewhere. But I mean, I think that in 10 to 20 years, I'd like to think that I'd still be doing the same stuff that I am, but even better. I think medicine will have changed so much. I mean, technology and how we adapt into medicine and surgery in particular will only continue to grow. But yeah, I mean, at that time, I think my kids will be almost graduating high school. So there's no way I'll be retired because I'll still have to pay for their college. I don't know where I'll be in 10 years, but I can only imagine it's not far from where I am right now. So we'll see.
Well, I think that's a great note to end on. Thank you very much, Dr. Grunge, for joining us today. We loved hearing about your life and your career and are so excited for our listeners to get to listen to this episode.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Wiser. If you liked this episode, please rate and leave a review as it helps others find the show. You can also share with friends and family. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Wiser Podcast for updates.